Okay, the gospel then for proper seven, year B is Mark chapter 4, verses 35 to 41. And as soon as we get into it, you can see there is a lot of connection in vocabulary with the Job passage you just looked at, even though the connection of themes might not seem to be as obvious. If you want to set the stage for your hearer, up to this point, if you've been reading along in Mark, you have already seen Jesus perform several healing miracles, beginning with a man with an unclean spirit in the synagogue at Capernaum. And then, of course, right after that, they go to Peter's house and Jesus heals his mother-in-law. Then all the sick of Capernaum are brought to Jesus. He heals a leper, a paralytic, a man with a withered hand. It's interesting that France, in his commentary, says this passage, though, our passage, 4:35 and following, places Jesus in a more starkly supernatural light even than the healing miracles. Now, we've just heard from Job that it's the Lord alone who says to the storm, "This far you shall come and no farther." And to the waves, he says, "Here shall you be stayed." When Jesus heals the paralytic at the beginning of chapter 2, what scandalizes the crowd is not that Jesus would heal, but that he would pronounce absolution. Apparently, an agent could perform the former, but only the Lord could forgive sins. In this pericope, too, then, we see Jesus doing something more characteristic of the Lord himself than of any of his agents. And I think that's the point France is trying to get to. But I want to come back to that after we look at the passage ourselves. Okay, so beginning at Mark 4:35, Kai lege autois in ekene te himera opsias genomenes. You see here the historic present, which is very common in Mark, where you'd expect past in simple narrative. This signals here then a new episode. This is where Mark is going to pick up the story as if we're watching it unfold again. So he says to them, "En ekene te himera." Wallace points out that you see this in classical Greek, but certainly in Koine Greek, "en" plus the dative increasingly replaces the dative of time. In fact, in Koine Greek in general, prepositions more and more try to define the force of the cases, whereas in classical Greek you'd have a lot fewer prepositions, but let simply the dative case tell you this was when. So he says to them, on that day, opsias genomenes, when it had become evening, here really in the evening, with opsias really forming, functioning as a feminine noun, substantive from the adjective, the late part of the day. And ginomai here simply in the aorist participle. Dielthomen eis ta peron. Dielthomen from dierkamai is an aorist subjunctive, and here the hortatory one, the one that's giving the suggestion, "Let us do something." And of course, when it's your master who says that, it's more than just the suggestion. You all follow the plan. Peron is again substantive from an adverb, meaning across, to the other side, then with the article meaning the other side, that is the land or shore across some body of water. So let us go over to the other side. Okay. Then verse 36, Kai aphentes ton ochlon. The second word, the participle, is from aphiemi. It's an aorist active. And here it's important to remember that this does have a transitive meaning in certain cases where it takes an object here of letting go, dismissing, sending away in that sense. So having dismissed the crowd, and notice that this is a masculine plural, then they, paralambanusen auton, they take him along. And the they here would be the autois from verse 35. That is his close circle of disciples who've been working with him and traveling with him. So they, like ushers, dismiss the crowd, and then they take him along, really at his own command, that they cross over. Then you have hos ein en to ployo. And you'll find lengthy discussions on this. It doesn't look like it should be that hard to translate, although it certainly strikes you as awkward when you try to put it together. Hos would be the, you know, the as he was in the boat. Certainly it's not a since. They took him along because he was in the boat. I mean, he was the main reason they were going anyway. Probably the most common view is that that Jesus is pictured here as still in the boat from much earlier when he was teaching the crowds, and the crowd was so big that he had to sit in the boat with the disciples on shore. It seems like Jesus would have gotten out of the boat between this point and the beginning of the chapter, especially because there's a private conversation between him and his disciples. So some will try to suggest that the N here really takes the place of ace, that they take Jesus into the boat, that is in a sense back into the boat just as he was without eating or changing or anything else. The exact force of it is really a little hard to pin down. But I think Gundry is probably right when he suggests that all of this is preparing you to see Jesus as passive and the disciples as active, because they're going to become the crew of the ship while Jesus then will be passively sleeping. Do you actively sleep? I don't know. But anyway, from this point forward, they will be the ones really doing things, struggling with things, trying to solve problems, save their own lives, and so forth. Okay. Kai ala ploya ein metautu, and other boats were with him. So it wasn't just them, but these other boats then quickly disappear from view as Mark continues to tell us the story. Probably that is just there as a reminder that Jesus was already gathering a following around him, and where he goes during this period of popularity, large groups of people want to follow. Okay, now verse 37, Kai genetai lilaps megale anemu. This is where you start to see the vocabulary from Job. Professor Carr mentioned that whirlwind in 38:1 wasn't the same as with Elijah. But it is actually the same word in the Septuagint that we have here. So you don't see the exact same wording, but the same word for storm. And if it's already a whirlwind, a gale, or a hurricane, you don't really need to say that it was a great one. You don't really have small typhoons. But a great storm, and then of wind, that all seems redundant, but it's, of course, all there for emphasis to show how powerful this storm was. Kai takumata, another word that was in the Job passage for waves, in the Septuagint, that is. Ep ebalen, from epibalo, now in the imperfect, they were beating upon, they were breaking over, that is, in a sense, crashing into the boat. And note the imperfect, that they were beginning to do this. So it wasn't that the, well, we'll see, the boat was already full, but it was getting there. So that's how serious the storm was, that it was actually water was coming into the boat, which indicates then the result, so that Adai already gemidzesthai, with the present infinitive passive here, and the accusative subject, the boat was filling, beginning to be filled, and of course with the waves, that is, with water. Hosta, you remember, takes usually the infinitive, so that's why you have gemidzesthai and the accusative. Okay, then verse 38. Kai autos ein. Now you have to look long and far to find a real antecedent for the autos here. But in the Gospels generally, and Mark in particular, when you just have autos again, it's Jesus. He himself, and Gundry, I think, again, makes a nice point that the emphasis here contrasts what Jesus is doing with what the storm is doing. The storm is all turbulence and violence. Jesus is all calm and peace. He himself was ente primne. That's the back part of a boat, stern. You'd normally call it, doesn't necessarily suggest a huge boat, but he was there, epi ta pros kephalion kathudon. Kathudo, the present participle, then he was there sleeping on cushion or pillow. I don't think it really matters how we translate this, but it's the kind of padding you would find on a boat for resting. So this is what was happening in such strong contrast to what's going on all about him. He is resting and even comfortably on this cushion. Kai egerusin auton, and here, notice we're switching now to present for everybody, and they wake him, rouse him from his sleep, and legusin auto, and say to him, didaskale, vocative for teacher, teacher, umele soi hoti apulimatha. Now you have u with a question, and normally that expects what kind of an answer? A yes answer, affirmative. So you often find both translations and preachers taking this the other way, as if, teacher, don't you care about us? But it really, their question is, teacher, that we are perishing is a concern to you, isn't it? So they're really wanting confirmation that they feel certainly Jesus would be concerned to know that they were about to die. And of course, here again, with the present tense for apolumi, Wallace says it's a progressive present. You know, we're in the process of it. It's not that it's too late or it's irreversible, but if things continue as they are, we're done for. Okay, then verse 39, Kai diagerthes. Here you have agero with a prefix, dia, and dia often means that something has, a process has gone through to its completion. So he's sort of thoroughly awake, or awake through and through. Some have suggested this means Jesus not only is awake, but he stands up. In any case, he's ready to act, and the reader is poised to see what he's going to do. Epitemesen to anemo, kai epente thalase siopa pephimosa. So the first verb is from epitemao, which is to rebuke something, to speak seriously, to warn it, often in the sense of preventing someone from doing something harmful or wrong. So he rebukes the wind, and the verb then takes a dative object, and that explains the case of anemo. And he said to the sea, siopa, from siopao, an alpha contract. This would be the present imperative active. And present imperatives in this case are the unusual ones. Remember, Dr. Velt said, usually you'd have the aorist, sort of like our shut up. But here it's the present, more like you might say, hold your tongue. That is, be quiet and keep on being quiet. Don't say another word. That has that kind of force to it. And pephimoso is even more rarer, because it's both perfect and passive, and then in the imperative mood. So be silenced. And in the its more literal uses, this has the idea of muzzling, so a sort of, in that sense, a passive becoming quiet. Someone else forces you to be quiet. And the perfect then suggests really this ongoing state of silence that follows. So both of the tenses with their meanings together suggest that this was the end of the storm. It wasn't a temporary cessation, but it was going to be calm, and they were going to be able to reach their destination in safety. Okay, then to finish verse 39, kai ekopazen ha animos, kai egenata galene megale. So kapazo means to cease or stop. So the wind ceased. Here you have an aorist. France suggests this is to suggest the immediacy of the response. It didn't start to quiet down, but immediately it was still. Kai egenita galene megale, and there was a great galene is a well, I think of it as the kind of water that you want to water ski on. It's like glass, like a mirror, you know, not even a ripple. It's that kind of a calm. And you can see how the great calm then mirrors the great lilaps, the great storm that arose. So the effect of Jesus' words corresponds to the ferocity of the problem. Every time I see this, I remember a student paper that got turned in without getting its final proofreading, and it said, and the wind ceased, and there was a great clam. And that suddenly gave me a very different picture of what was happening here. Okay, but in Mark, not the apocryphal Mark, there's a great calm. And he said to them, kai apen autois, ti de loi esta upo echeta pistin. Deloy is cowardly or timid, not a complimentary word, not a word of respect, but of simple cowardice, that kind of fear. And then explained with a T as the why, then why are you cowardly or fearful? Upo, that is not yet, do you have faith? And then 41, ephobethazon, phobon, megon. A lot of great things in this passage. So great storm, great calm. Now it ends with great fear, which may not be exactly where you wanted it to end. But this is the fear that is can be used of the fear of God for respect here. And now instead of before they had a problem, they went and confronted Jesus. Now they have a problem, and they sort of whisper among themselves, saying to Allelus, each other, Tis ara hutos estin. Who is this one then, in light of all this, the ara, in light of all that we've just witnessed? Who can we say this person is. Hoti kai ha animas kai he thalassa hippakue auto. Because even the wind and the sea obey him. And notice the present there, are obeying him. You could almost say, as we speak. Right? Because as they look around them, there's the great calm. That's the result of his words. Okay, I don't have a watch, so I have no idea what time it is, but feel free to leave if you have to. Let me just make a few closing comments here about how to think of this passage in terms of preaching. There certainly can be no doubt that this demonstrates the exousia of Jesus, his authority. I have a note. It seems a shame to me to reduce this to one more item in a catalog of Christological proof texts. And it always strikes me as a little bit odd when the theme of a sermon is Jesus is God. I think most people in the congregation knew that when they came. So the question is, what can this text tell us about Jesus that we perhaps don't already know or at least haven't thought about for a while? The other risk here is to let this slip into a parable and make your theme something like Jesus stills the storms in our lives, where storms stand for trouble and Jesus calms them all. Not only is that simply bad exegesis, but it's also really not true. Now, Jesus does provide peace, but it's not by taking away all the storms. Neither does the text promise that no Christians will die at sea. So you have to be careful, again, with a narrative passage, trying to make a principle or a doctrine out of it. A helpful way to look at this, of course, is in light of the passage from Job. And who is it that sets the boundaries to the waves and say, you stop here, or the sea, you don't go beyond this point? But it's also interesting to ask, comparing this passage from Mark with Job, does Jesus take the place of God, or does he take the place of Job? I think it's at least a little bit suggestive, a little bit provocative perhaps, that you can say both. Here at last is a man who can answer those questions God was placing or posing to Job, right? Who can say, I was there when the boundaries were set, and I know where the pillars of the earth are sunk to. So in one sense, it's not just that Jesus is God, and you thought he was just a man, but Jesus is also the kind of man that can subdue the earth, that has the authority that we think only belongs to God, but here is truly proper also to the Son of God, who is then God with us. As much as we warn people against allegorizing the parable, there's a certain attractiveness to a point Augustine makes in one of his sermons on this text. And this is in the Ancient Christian Commentary, if you have that series. Let me just skip to the main point. He says, troubles are like winds and waves that batter you, and you, of course, want to take revenge on those who are persecuting you, but when you take revenge yourself, that leads to shipwreck. And of course, you can see where, yes, this is full-fledged allegory here. But then he says, why is this? Because Christ is asleep in you. What do I mean? I mean, you have forgotten his presence. Rouse him then, remember him, let him keep watch within you, pay heed to him. Now, again, the first part, be very careful with, but the second one, I think, begins to show a kind of connection between our situation and that of the disciples. And maybe the point is when we begin to fear, not that Jesus doesn't care for us, but that he's unable to solve this big of a problem for us, then maybe Augustine's point is right, that he's sleeping in us, that is, that we have forgotten that he's even there with us. And then it's time to call upon him and not like the disciples, but in the full faith that they would come to have, plead with Jesus to rescue us because he cares for us. Okay, I think I'll stop there and see if anyone here have any questions. If not, thank you very much. Thank you to our virtual audience for joining us as well.